Welcome to the Automate and Grow podcast, brought to you by Cloud Advisory. On this podcast, we talk about ways to grow, innovate, and automate your business using strategy, technology, and tactics that we learn from interviews with experts and business leaders alike. Without further ado, here's the next episode of Automate and Grow.
Perfect. Okay. Wow. For two smart guys, you're at the right time.
Technology
can't really work. Oh my God. All right. So let's see. We can go off the cuff a little bit. That's sure. How I usually do it. But welcome to Automate and Grow. This is episode 3 that I've recorded.
Nice.
And I'm here today with Greg Narain from Before Alpha.
Yep.
And Greg has got an auspicious background that I don't know how much you want to get into, but Greg's been through Y Combinator and funded startup space and is known as a digital product innovator and builder and company builder.
Yep.
And we're here, by the way, in Silicon Valley in San Francisco, right?
Yep.
So we're right
in the heart of it. Yeah.
Part of the real deal, right? There's That's no pretending right. out here.
No. Yeah, there's a lot of pretending.
Yeah. There's a lot of money that validates, money validates a lot of things, whether it's real or not, right?
That's true. It's absolutely true.
So either way, there's a lot of, how do you put it, funded experimentation?
Yeah.
And are we close to anything exciting out here? I don't know where.
So where we are, we're right near the Caltrain, so we've got Box and Lyft.
Oh, cool. Not,
just a stone's throw from here.
Wow.
Two, three blocks. Four blocks that way is, you know, Airbnb and Pinterest.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah,
okay. I don't like Pinterest. Do you like Pinterest?
No, I'm not a never it's got just not it, my thing.
I don't think it's my demographic.
Yeah.
Or I'm not their demographic. It's probably the other way around.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't fit. I'm not welcome in that.
I have used it a couple of times though. So
awesome. So Automate and Grow, we talk about a couple of things, and one of the big things that we talk about is I would say digital product innovation. And, you know, one of the themes that I write about is talk about in the podcast is, you know, I feel that every business today is a digital business, whether they realize it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the number one job of every entrepreneur right now is to look at the customer that they have, understand the problem they're solving with whatever product or service they have, and see if they can address it using a digital technology of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, I think this is kind of goes back to the idea of digital product innovation. And we kind of talked about this before,
yeah,
where you might know the product that you're selling to the customer, but what I want people to do is really drill down on what the problem they're solving is. Because I think that right now we're at the beginning, of probably the next 10 years, the change that's going to happen because of some of the transformational technologies,
yeah,
is going to dwarf what happened over the last 10 years. So I think that what your customer today is buying from you, in 10 years, they're not going to be buying. And I don't know if you agree with that.
I think many variations of that are true, right? I think the customer you sell to today may not be the customer that you sell to. The way you sell may not be the way you sell.
That's for
sure.
The
thing you sell may not be the thing you sell.
Right.
So yeah, I think everything is in flux at this point. Yeah. I think you're right, though. There's the way I like to think about it is like the symbiotic yin and yang sort of relationship between technology and people, culture, mm-hmm, right? And so I think technology is a tool in the service of, you know, solutions that people need to problems that they have,
right?
And so I think it is important. Technology is important, but I think to your broader point, it is the outcome of something else, likely. Right, like so, there is a significant amount of technology in the sort of like what if category, like,
right?
Where it's not guided or directed towards a thing, but it's more a curiosity that someone is pulling.
Mm-hmm.
Those tend to be the longer looking efforts, right? Like technologies that are way, way off, right?
You're saying like macro based technologies,
yeah,
that are futuristic,
you know, like you hear about nanobots and all kinds of things like that.
But nanotechnology might be more real than we realize.
No,
it's probably not mainstream yet.
Like, absolutely right, right? So yeah, I think like I'm always using the point of view of like, when is it mainstream as opposed to
it's like bleeding edge versus leading edge versus,
that's right.
Yeah.
And so I think like, you know, there's those kinds of technologies. But I think like the broader technology is really more born out of like of what people need,
right,
and how they're changing.
That's why I try to bring people back, because I think it's overwhelming for people. I think people have almost this fear and uncertainty, because I'll talk to people that own a business, and the first thing they'll say is, "Well, I'm not a techie."
Right.
And I'm like, "That's okay, because you're a business person that has a customer," and that's why I kind of say begin with the customer. Right?
Isn't that like, kind of like saying like I don't if you only took credit cards that you don't deal with money. Right, like you're using a technology, right? Technically, yeah, you're using a technology that is in lieu of a previous technology,
right?
Right, and so techie is a relative term, right?
And I think to people like I think this is a reflection of what's happened over, let's call it, since 1969.
Yeah,
because I think what happened then was what they call the third industrial revolution, mm-hmm. right? Where it's like electronics, it's mass production of electronics, computers. Eventually that becomes networks. Eventually that becomes digital stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Some of it drawn by the maturation of the web, some of it by mobile.
Yeah.
Right? It was like, think about it, 2007, I keep bringing this up in probably every friggin' podcast, but 2007, it's been 10 years, iPhone,
right?
And the concept of an app, which is taking, digital software down to the simplest mm-hmm. form for people to address little things.
Yeah.
What I think's happening is, yes, we still have computers and networks, but I think we're entering another age of autonomous and automated mm-hmm. digital. And you see also then these other transformational technologies like robotics, 3D printing, digital medicine, synthetic biology. I would argue almost like, I guess blockchain in a sense fits inside of computers and networks, but it's also kind of its own animal around how to deal with agreements. Mm-hmm. I'm not even talking currency, I'm saying blockchain, right? So I think each of those categories is going to change things.
Right.
Somehow, you as an entrepreneur need to figure out, one of these is going to address my customer problem in a unique way.
Yeah.
And I guess I like, one of the reasons I wound up Greg on was because I think you with Before Alpha, that's kind of what you're doing, right?
Yep. Like,
you're trying to help people come up with that strategy. And then build something to address that customer. Yeah. So maybe talk a little bit about what is Before Alpha.
Yeah.
I keep saying Beyond, but it's Before Alpha.
We're a strategy agency. I think the best way to describe what we do is I like to say that we transform successful businesses into successful startups. Right.
Interesting. So you take a startup mentality of disruption, because it's an overused word, but it's mm-hmm. kind of what you're doing, right?
Yeah, we take that point of view that lighter weight processes, iterative processes, customer first processes, right? And sort of say these tools are more normalized to today, actually, right, than say the previous ways that we produced and delivered things.
Okay.
And not that they are the only way, right? But that they do provide potentially a strategic advantage to companies, right? As well as a tactical advantage, right? In terms of delivering things in the near and short term.
So in a less esoteric manner,
yeah.
If we bring it down to a guy that might get, we can geek out on this stuff.
Yeah.
So really the way I look at it, and maybe you can agree or disagree, is you're creating your own economy. You're trying to figure out what the customer needs and how to deliver it in a different way. Using some form of a digital solution. Like in your case, it's usually computers, apps.
Potentially, yeah. So I'd say like you're creating an economy that obviously where you're a part of that ecosystem. But I think what startups spend a lot of time doing, for example, right, is more like anthropology, right? Like they're observing customers in the wild, not for...
And then how to divert
them? Yeah, not for what they expect,
that
right?
Makes sense.
Not for what they expect, but it's like... Yeah, it's like, what are they already doing that they're having trouble with that I can deliver a problem to, right? Whereas, like, the more established your company becomes, mm-hmm. what tends to happen is you become hardened in sort of your point of view about who your customer is and what they need.
Because you're trying to attract that ideal client and then deliver
that's
on
right.
what you understand.
You're like, trying to go from 50, 60, 70% market share to 80, 90, 100% versus going from 0 to 10,
right?
And so it's like in the power of being like where you have nothing, and when you operate from that point of view, you can have a different kind of success, right? Which can be far more disruptive than the maintenance sort of often that is happening with bottom lines and sort of revenue and books, right? Like at bigger and more established stages.
So the moral of that story is A, don't get complacent.
That's right.
And B, businesses that even though you're established today, You have a product or service or solution that your customer's buying. It might be software, it might be hardware, it might be some professional service or something in between, right? What we're saying is basically the same thing, I think. That demand curve, you're successful because you're marching along that demand curve, but there's someone out there thinking about how to create a new demand curve for that same customer, which will divert them. So when you talk about them in the wild, I'm observing them to see how I can divert them.
That's right. So I think part of the problem is like is that you can't see that line forever, right? Like
at some point the demand curve diminishes.
That's right. So you can't tell like it gets crowded. There's a dark space after, right? And so it's like our revenue went up 10%, which is what our goal was, right?
Right.
But yes, it went up 10% in the smaller pile now, right? Like yes, you may hit a local maximum or something, right? Like in what's possible for your business that you don't realize. Startups tend to make it a practice to find those things, but they step in it just as much, right? So they're not foolproof either, right?
No, you're taking an educated guess, and then you're trying to get some traction.
You don't know you've hit the max until you hit the max, right?
So for an individual entrepreneur, for example, there's probably people that let's go the lowest, like a solopreneur. That's a very different business.
Yes.
And I think those are businesses that can still be, innovative, but mostly what they're delivering usually is a boutique professional services, I would say, right?
Or coaches, or a very finite product.
Developers, like...
Right, yeah. Yeah, like well-defined... It's a very well-defined deliverable, which may be their time or, maybe a few variations on a simple product, right? Yeah.
And it's probably good because people are buying from them because they like that personalized human.
Yeah, I think the people who can reasonably say like I I'm not a techie or I don't need technology are literally the people who trade in nostalgia, right? Like if you sell the fact that the thing that you sell is old on purpose,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, sure, maybe, right? Like, but that only might deal with the production of your thing, right? It doesn't mean that your customers are still on mobile devices and apps, right?
Right.
So if you want to reach them, then
there's a channel.
Unless the whole shtick of reaching you is like to not use a channel, right? Like then, yeah, but that's just not really a.
So then, space. Before Alpha would be someone that wants to then be kind of maybe a step up, would you say, that is either a startup that wants to take over someone's customer and move them to another demand curve. So it's more of like they're figuring out, rather than just delivering a boutique service, they're delivering a boutique solution is that a good way
I'd say, we tend to focus on like four key areas, and I think they apply broadly to we sort of have a way of thinking about transformation. And I think it applies to large companies, startups, or any company of any size, right?
Yep.
The first one is, I call it the four P's, right? And the first P is like perspective. Like, what business am I actually in, right? And so, if you're in retail today, it's kind of a bloodbath out there, right?
Sure.
You might be now thinking, I have these other, what are all, we might say to you, well, what are the assets you actually have?
Right.
And are there ways to remix them potentially, right? That may give you new kinds of value or different value or better leverage, right, than the current way you think to use them.
And the problem with retail often is, yes, they may have a brand. They may or may not understand their own identity and their own customer. And they're probably their biggest investment is in just location.
That's right.
But that's being disintermediated by Amazon or other
e-commerce. But it may also be that for example, people are looking for more spaces to have experiences in.
I was going
to
say,
as opposed to like say retail.
Right.
And so are there ways to repurpose your knowledge of logistics and staging and other things like that to help create those kinds of environments, right? Like for retailers, but maybe not you being a retailer anymore.
So this relates to which P again?
The first P, perspective. Like what business am I actually in?
What business am I actually in? Yeah. Got it. Okay.
Right. The second P then, usually these are not actually dependent on each other, but they tend to go in this order, right? Is the personas. So who do I actually sell to? So now I think we used the example before of like if I'm Ford, Ford came out and said, we are not a automotive company anymore. We're a mobility company, right? And that's like the connected vehicle and all the things that come with that, right? And I agree, right? But I'd argue like potentially, right? Like now with the, autonomous vehicles on the horizon, right? Like actual reality, right?
Like cars that drive themselves.
What do you have now? You have a vehicle that you spend two or three hours a day in where you don't need to drive it. So now I'm actually thinking like maybe you're a productivity company, maybe you're an entertainment company, right? Because now it's my job to give you a way to fill that time
And are you selling cars anymore?
Right. Yeah. Well, so maybe you sell the car, but maybe the value proposition of a car is different, right? Because, you know, people assume like, well, the safety is fairly, like you have to pass standards. So sure. Most cars are fairly safe, right? Like you're just not allowed to make a car that's not safe, right? So safety might fall off or become less important. Right?
Does Ford continue to build cars?
Yeah, you know, but you look at, you live in the Bay Area here, and now like people may start to think like, well, I could move to a suburb that I wouldn't have considered before because that time is not wasted to me anymore.
Right.
Right.
Because it's productive time.
That's right, because it's productive time. But now it's like, can I make that vehicle productive, right? So suddenly the buyer changes from like someone who might have been buying for safety, they're buying to optimize the commute. Right, or they might be buying for fuel efficiency, right? But now they're actually looking for a different kind of experience, and maybe it's a different set of attributes that you highlight, right, or that are interesting or appealing to that customer.
So we've talked. So we have perspective, which is what you know. What's the world look like? What business am I finally in?
Yeah.
Persona, which is what
who's buying things in that space, right? And so, by the way, that's a new kind of customer, maybe that you didn't think about.
Yeah.
There's also just like new audiences, right? Like, well, we've always sold to. You know, moms, but guess what? Now dads are raising kids in an increasing rate. Maybe there's ways of applying or thinking about dads as a persona that we service, right? Like as an example, right? The third P then is process, right? So it's really like, how do we make the things we make, right? Like, and so where startups tend to kick a lot of, you know, established companies' butts is like literally by moving paper processes to digital.
That makes sense. Yep.
And so are there inefficiencies, right, in the way you do them, right? Have you gotten to a size where basically there's like a bunch of sort of built-in friction in every process, right? Like are there parts that don't work that you carry around just because that's how you've always done it?
It's like, you know, before we had a camera, we had a phone, we had a pager.
That's right.
Probably, you know, a GPS device. Yeah. Now you get a smartphone.
That's right.
Right? The example, but it's funny, I got panned by one person for using the example of Uber when I wrote in the introduction. It might be a little long introduction, but my point of writing about Uber wasn't that there's a profile of how innovative Uber is.
Right.
It's, well, when you break down what they did is they took an industry and they took stuff that was broken, not just one piece, the worst industry, which is the taxi, and they went from like dispatch over a group thing to... Boom, here's my car, it's coming to me.
Yeah, that's
right. Or payment, right?
That's right.
Well, do you got cash? I don't want to take cards. Well, it doesn't matter, you're just paying through the app. Yeah. Like, so they looked at all the pain points, right? And so they changed the process. Kind of like what you said, where you went from paper to digital. So
yeah, and, well, and some of those things map to the last P, which is product.
Product. Right? So that's your final.
Yeah. And so actually these four Ps have like a corresponding thing, right? I think about it like, you know, that yin and yang. And on the cultural side, you know, your perspective is really about like what do people value to your early point, or your first point, right? The second P, personas, really is about what do we believe, right? So even though everyone may universally value like not killing each other, right? You know, individuals inside of there will have different beliefs about it, right? Like some people believe it's okay in certain circumstances. Some people
And that's like the core of weird debates.
That's Yeah, but you get the point, right? Which is that like values and beliefs are tightly coupled. They drive culture, right?
Okay.
So even though there could be a shared set of beliefs, or emergent beliefs, right? Like the value, right? Then the way that we interpret them, the beliefs we have are different. On the other side, the is where technology is dominant, right? So that from a point of view of like process. It's like, is there more efficiency to be garnered out of the way we do it, right?
Makes sense.
And then on the product side, the outlier there, the sentiment of it is ultimately what's the efficacy, right? So we've got more efficient processes. That's how we get the product to customers faster, right? But then the product itself could be more effective at doing the things that it does, right? So, for example, I might say, like, being able to take seamlessly having credit cards on file when I get in a car is just a more effective way of dealing with, you know, the experience of the product of riding a car, right? As opposed to the process, right?
Right.
Like, procedurally, even the hailing process.
The car might get there.
A lot of the things in Uber, right?
To pick you up.
Yeah, the process stuff for Uber really was actually on the legal side, right? And,
right.
And really about removing this inefficiency in how the businesses run itself, right?
Because it was like mandated by...
That's right. And a little bit, and then, but for Uber, you know, it's a little blendo, but... For the consumer, the efficiency, the efficacy part is actually being able to hail a car faster.
And when you say efficacy, what do you mean by that?
So a better way to do the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Right? Right? Okay. As opposed to a new way, a faster way to do the same thing. right? Like, makes sense. Qualitatively, though, yeah. Right? Like, so one is like purely speed, quantitative, like I can measure it, right?
Got it.
And the other one is a little more qualitative, right? Like it feels better to use it, right? And sometimes they may be one and the same, right? So consumers don't usually differentiate. Like faster is better, is gooder. Right?
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. Right? For some people, yeah.
Often, right?
Unless it's crashing.
Is an attribute. That's right. Yeah.
So, all right. So when you go into, when you work with a client,
yeah.
you're taking this framework of the four Ps, and how much are you explaining to them versus going in and kind of dissecting what they're doing?
So it's a little bit of both, right? I think in a lot of ways we work as mentors, right? So what we like to, the way we frame like ourselves is like, we're kind of like the folks you couldn't normally hire, right? Like you usually can't hire serial founders to come like work with you. You
oh, right.
Can't
yeah.
hire a venture capitalist
sure.
to come work with you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, the folks who are really, really top of their game, right? I guess maybe
they're starting something
game,
else,
right? But they're going to do something else, right?
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure there's many layers
I'm tired of doing that for a little while. Right. And so, yeah. So part of what I love though is helping others and being a mentor. And so, fundamentally, I think like when companies, you know, like when I'm not a techie, you know, I'd argue that that's kind of like a DNA thing, right? And
sure.
So
it goes back to the the culture of the
that's right.
owner.
Like I
right?
think more it's people like, can have the DNA if they have the willingness to have it. If
of
you
course.
Don't have
yeah,
it,
yeah.
right? Like sometimes you need someone expertise to help break it down for you to make it understandable. That's a lot of what we do.
Okay.
Right? Is really not trying to tell you the answer, but oftentimes we will have answers, suggestions, or guidance, right? But the goal is to try and help you start to use the framework yourself to actually be able to answer those questions the way someone like us would, as opposed to us being there to constantly tell you the answer.
So there's a element of consulting expertise, obviously,
yeah.
you deliver, and mentorship,
that's
obviously,
right.
is what you mentioned. So
and tactical things, too, right? So sometimes...
It's like, okay,
yeah,
we decided this is how the world
right.
looks,
and
this is who the customer is, and we're going to
do different.
A big
part of what we believe differentiates us, though, I think, and what I've understood and learned from all my years in business, is when people can see something, it's far easier for them to understand it.
Sure,
than
that's,
like, if
yeah.
I just tell them it.
See, right? I can see where this conversation for someone that throws up that barrier...
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess the question is, who's going to engage you
yeah.
in that? Because I could see where people would watch this and they go, whoa, what are you guys talking about? I think in the end, what we're talking about is, how do I, as a whether I'm small, big,
yep.
established, or starting out,
yep.
how do I differentiate myself in the market? And how do I create the next 10 years with something?
Yeah,
it might be beyond that, but I'd be surprised, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe, I mean, I guess it depends, right? That's probably part of whatever that answer is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what... When you're dealing with companies, are they mostly innovative companies, or are they companies that are like stuck and they're trying to get help?
They're always innovative companies, or companies who aspire to be more innovative.
Okay,
right?
So they're not the guys that's gonna go off a cliff of an existing demand curve. They are, and they just recognize
sometimes,
it
right? So I arguably
sure
so for example,
it's
like in the four Ps, right? Most of the time, folks don't come to us looking for a perspective change.
Okay,
right? Unless they're totally screwed.
So there's
right,
leadership
right,
around
right.
that emotional
realization. When someone realizes, like, when they finally realize there's a cliff over there.
Now what?
Mm. It's oftentimes too late, right? So it's not a lot you can always do there,
yeah.
right? But in the times when you do see it early enough, that's when you start to entertain broader perspectives, right? The technology stuff is the easier stuff, right? Because it's very easy to be like, oh, well, there's some new technology that does this that can add a little bit more.
Just, you understand
efficiency
that.
And effect. It's mm-hmm. easy. It's direct. It's
right.
applicable, right? Like to your system, like to likely what you're doing very quickly.
See, I say we're in a unique time because I think like no other time, we could build anything.
Yeah.
Like I think there's this general, I don't know if you call it optimism or understanding,
yeah.
at least by most people that, I could tackle any problem. I just have
yeah.
to understand and define the problem and understand and define the solution, or at least a hypothesis
yeah.
of what it is, and then you test and prove it out, right?
Yep.
I think that's kind of what's going on, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We've evolved to...
Technology is no longer our barrier for the most part.
Yeah. No, I don't think so.
It's imagination.
Generally speaking, yeah. I think the only thing that is a limiting factor now with technology is just the cost of operating it, right? Like, I think everything is probably... achievable in one form or another. It may not be an optimal form. It may not be an inexpensive form, right? So it may be that I would argue that probably 90% of the things you want to do are probably fairly achievable at
mm-hmm.
a fairly low cost, right?
It's pretty good.
Yeah. But here's the thing. It may introduce a new cost curve. It may introduce new new dimensions to your business itself, though.
Sure.
Right? That then have the implications. And that's usually where people stumble, right?
It's like when, I'll use a wacky example. Yeah. It's like, I'm George Lucas, 1977, making Star Wars, and all the technology around
right.
effects.
Yeah, from that's scratch. Right, that's right, right? And, right. So, okay. and so what ends up happening is...
That can happen, you're saying.
And that's where process tends to be where we help the most, right?
Interesting, okay.
Because that is where there's just inefficiency. It's like people get in the way, right? Like, you know, I'm working on this post and...
It's a mindset thing, you think?
Yeah, right. I don't know. It's, the post I write is actually called The Three Kinds of No.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
And the idea is that there's three kinds of no that you can sort of find in the world, right? Like, you ask someone to do something and say, no, that's impossible, right? Well, it's impossible because they don't actually know.
In their head.
They don't know that there's a way to solve it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. right? Like, the next kind of no is that it's impractical, which means that they don't want to do it, right? Like, it's too much work, it's too much effort for them, right? Et cetera, right? And it's improbable, right? It's sort of like that third domain, which is like where I'm Nobody scared knows. To do it because it may harm me. No.
Oh.
Right? Right?
There's harm that yeah. can come out of it.
Well, because there's a political tax, right? Like, if I do this, what does it mean to me?
So it's challenging
That's right.
norms or of either doing it that way or what That's other people right. think. Yeah. Or...
And so anytime you ask someone and you get a no, the real question is like, why are you saying no? Right? Like, is it like you don't have the resources, right? So you're saying no, but the reality is like it's just because you don't have the resources. Well, what if I told you you could have the resources? Then would you say yes, right?
So that's interesting. So what you're talking about is overcoming that objection.
That's right.
As the barrier to doing something.
That's right. So yeah. for example, right? Like let's say you're, you know,
which, by the way, I write about. I don't
yeah.
So I, when,
but you know that's the point. Same issue, you think about like construction. You think about any space. Right?
We're
imagine
the
paper to digital thing, right? Like
right.
people say no for fear.
Right.
Not because they don't understand
right.
that it could That's be better, funny. But they worry about what does it mean when I pull this thread?
Right,
right.
Right.
Like, so that means eventually you don't need me to be here to do this piece either.
So,
right?
And I think there's a lot of that going on,
yeah.
right? Where there's fear that, you know, there's media hype around robots replacing people,
yeah.
AI replacing people,
yeah.
a jobless future. There's one site that I really have come to like kind of be annoyed by, which is futurism. Have you read?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen
and you know,
that.
They're like to me techno socialists of the
right.
future. Like, wait, this is not the future. Like,
yeah.
you're saying nobody's going to work and everybody needs to be supported by some phantom government.
Yeah, yeah,
that's not the future. Like,
yeah,
but so wait, I think, and I write about this too, which
yeah.
is, first of all, I think one chapter in the book is don't be afraid of change.
Yeah,
and the other one is dancing with robots.
Yeah, not nice.
right.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's
oh,
like,
but that's, and that's exactly like, what it is. Right?
Don't let that
but the
stop
problem is,
you from going through the conversation.
You can't
of,
tell someone to not be afraid.
You can give
you
them
reason. You have to make them,
show them
not afraid.
How do
yeah.
you make them not afraid?
You create the space for success to happen, right? So again, it's like I said, like let's say someone's saying no because they feel like they don't possess the skills. Well, let's get you the education. Let's get you the mentorship. Let's get you the tools that help you do the thing that you're fearful of doing, or not even fearful of doing, fearful of committing to.
So are you
right?
talking about, in? I mean, I guess this could apply to two things, but are you talking in society in general?
It's a little
are
bit of both.
Are you talking about the society of a corporation?
I mean,
a company,
companies
or?
Are microcosms of the world, right? Like,
right,
you
okay.
know? So, yeah.
Big companies.
Yeah.
And little companies are probably a little easier to
A little companies,
smash
you can be more dictatorial, too,
yeah.
right? Like, you know, but
We're
like,
doing it
as
way.
There are more layers, right? Like, you tend to sort of, like, have more politicking going on
right,
through
right.
through the phases, right? And also what happens, I think, it was just a big problem in large companies is like, almost over-specialization,
mm-hmm.
right? So
all they know is their job.
They only know how to do the thing they
the
do.
Business.
Yeah, and they don't
and
have context
no
anymore, right? Yeah.
Right. Because it's like, if they go outside those bounds, then there's no incentive.
Yeah.
And it's actually also
well, or and sometimes there's punishment,
yeah, right?
Right?
Like
it's like
that's
hey,
my territory.
What are you doing? Yeah, like you're not allowed to put pixels on this page, or you're not allowed to, you know,
right.
talk to customers, or you're not allowed to, you know, offer support.
So I think you posted this article actually. Now that I think about it, which is that by 2027, the number of freelancers in the world is going to
yeah,
exceed the number
sure
of
that,
employees,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really interesting. What in the context of what we're talking about, which is applying technology or you know a new way of thinking about your customer problem, how does a freelancer survive in that world, or how does a freelancer navigate that world?
So you know, I actually think that there's a sort of revolution coming in the corporate side as well, And my advice to all people, I think, is, you know, have respect for the expertise you have, right? Like, most people don't understand what they're an expert at, right? And so as a result of that, they find their paths often inescapable, right?
It's so funny you say that. Go ahead.
Right? But and so I think, like,
yeah,
what's going to happen, this explosion in freelance is I think, you know, there's many factors, but the one that my theory, my principle that I believe in is that there's a natural evolution in expertise happening, right? And so, like, if you go, like, historically, right? I used to be considered a unicorn kind of person because I was a designer and a developer.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like 1995, yep. 1996, like, it just weren't people that had usually both.
Or they said like gold collar was right? Kind of like, you under marketing, sales, and technology. And it's like, well, that's right. Kind of given now.
And now when you look at what's happened, right? Startup culture in particular, but also the education system has sort of bred more pathways that allow diversity, right? Startups, because they didn't have resources, are like, well, wait, you're also in charge of customer service, or you're also in charge of marketing, or you're also in charge of this, right? And then you have, like, programs in education realm that are hybrid degrees or build your own degree, right? So where you could blend the types of skills that you are interested in. That has happened more.
Really?
Yeah.
I see it almost
way back when I was in college at NYU, like, we had Gallatin, and it was like a build your own degree program, right?
Oh, really?
You know, but, like, you know, there are JD/MD programs, right? Like, for people who are going to go in the pharma that are never going to practice medicine.
Do you think that stuff outside of profession, on a side note, is relevant today? Like, so, I see, like, engineering and some of these disciplines.
So the difference, I think, is that these people are not dabblers in one. They are good at both.
Mm-hmm. That's a very long, painful way to get good at stuff compared to the alternative route.
But what's the alternative?
Self-educated. Do it.
Yeah, but self-educated. No.
I mean, science is probably different.
Well, I'm saying, like,
even programming, though.
But in technology, right? Like, you learn, like, say, back end, and then you start to learn front end.
Right. Yeah.
It's two disciplines, actually.
But you're going to do that on your own more than anything.
Well, you might do it at work, though, right? So, like, you join a startup. You're in real time, sure. But what I'm saying is, it won't happen in the corporate world.
Interesting.
Right?
Unless the culture is...
Yeah. Now, here's why it has to... this change, I believe, is going to have to come down.
That's interesting.
The reason that the corporate world can't usually get folks like me is because the second you put me inside of one of the gates...
It kills one
we
of
We want
skills.
To kill somebody. And we have to
you
leave.
You don't fit in my department.
We just have to leave, right?
And you're like...
So think about the...
I don't want this cage.
You've heard of growth hackers, right?
Sure.
Well, what are they, right? Like,
yep.
They're a little bit engineer and they're a little bit marketer.
Right.
Right?
That's what I was talking about, right? Like,
right.
You have to...
But that's a real... Now that's a real
it's
role
a real thing.
With a person who has two real sets of skills that are from different domains, right?
So that's the revolution you're
that's
talking
right.
about.
But where does a growth hacker fit in a huge corporate structure, right? You're either in the marketing department or you're in engineering.
Probably
right?
marketing, but yeah.
Yeah. So that's what that example I was using, like, I need to put a pixel on the page. Well, now I got to go to IT, IPsec, I got to go to all these other people to be able to do this thing.
So you're getting back, it's almost like the union mentality where it's
that's
like,
right.
no, I make those photocopies.
That's right. So what I believe is that the corporate world has a DNA problem functionally, right, where they have these specialty people, but those specialties cause them harm when it comes to innovation, right? So they're useful for maintaining the status quo because they operate each of the tiny pieces of the machine that make it all go forward, right? But they're not good at building new machines.
So the opportunity then you're saying for freelancers is, or for them even, is to disperse of those people and use them.
That's right.
In a capacity where they're not stifled by that.
That's
that
right.
Culture
so I believe more
structure.
More people will offer to consult because, to your point, I don't believe that being committed and locked into only doing this one thing is the best thing for me,
mm-hmm.
right?
It's limiting and boring.
That's right.
And
so I may have like half my contracts in one space and the other half in another, right? And that's my blended skill set.
So now then what that also says, though, is there are people that are voluntarily becoming freelancers.
That's right, which is what the numbers are showing.
But there's also people that are just being forced out and being
thrust
into it.
And there's a separate... set of things going on there, right? Like, I think that are... But, you know, like, for example, right? Like, companies, like, you know, now with some of these new tax laws, right? Like, it's actually beneficial to be a freelancer and independent
right.
than to actually have a salary.
Sure. For right? sure. Always
right?
probably, right?
Well, so guess what? If a company says committed now, like, okay, well, 25% of our work can be freelance. Like, that's how we'll hire... Suddenly, they can also bring in better quality people that have other skills that go with those things, not just limited to that one skill, because that's just a natural thing that happens in the marketplace of freelance.
So this is where I see when people talk about being worried about being replaced by robots, being replaced by AI, I think functions might be.
Individual things that you should not be happy doing.
Repetitive.
Should hopefully go away, right?
Repetitive but important that I talk about.
Right, yeah. Like, or anything that involves repetitive stamping of things, right? Like, why would you want to do that?
Right. That's why people, I always laugh when I was like, you hear us, you know, this theme of, well, our jobs all went to China. It's like, you don't want those jobs.
Most of them went to automation.
What's interesting, though, is that China has interesting capabilities that nobody else has also. So that's another debate. But so, I think the reason I bring it up about the freelancer thing is because I think there's people that voluntarily do it, but they probably need a totally different now set of skills.
There are many pathways to being a freelancer, right?
Like, they need to be able to know how to package themselves, market themselves, and maybe build a tool that's unique to them. And I think you had an idea we talked about before, which we won't get into too much, but it's the idea of, well, I'm going to build a software tool, but I'm not going to build it so everybody can use it. Only I can use it. It's my machine.
Yeah.
And if you want access to it, you have to pay a premium. And I'm the only guy that knows how to make it work.
Yeah.
So there's probably maybe an element of that where freelancers go from, hey, you're just an hourly guy that's out here with no benefits that you have to go on Upwork and get a gig, to freelancers being more savvy. And to your point, understanding their expertise and maybe being willing to grow it so they're not boxed in.
Yeah.
And now they're thinking in terms of, well, my customer's this big company or small companies or whatever it is.
And look, the main downside with freelance, I arguably, is the context switching, right? So, you know, like, how long does it take to know what it takes to do that kind of work at my company? Is like
the training element.
There's an onboarding, there's an acclimation period, right?
Right.
And so that's the biggest risk. And I think that's why companies prefer not to have those types of resources as the mainstay, because what's it take to sell, you know, detergent at P&G? It takes a while
because
to
there's
sort
a
of understand
element,
the business, understand
history,
the people you have to work with, et cetera,
methodology,
right? So I think we still have a lot of room to go in improving those things. Like, how do we get operational efficiency from people faster? Right, but that's a bin
as a freelancer,
or even any employee, right? Any employee, right? Like somebody starts, like, we want them to be able to work as quickly as possible. The reality is, like, there's onboarding and then there's utility, right? Like, and so, like, at what point do they actually become useful, right? Like,
right.
You hire a salesperson, it may take a quarter.
Oh, that's
right.
I see, to sort of get them going, right?
But so then, what if you could make that 2 weeks? Then couldn't you just actually have as many salespeople as you need?
Well, that goes too, like, to why people might outsource some of those functions, because maybe it's not just a person, but a person with a
but
tool
what,
again.
And what blocks outsourcing again is, again, already. The same thing is, how long does it take them to know my business?
Right.
Right? And so that's what startups focus on, is innovating on how long it takes for them to learn.
So it goes
about
back to
business.
Those four P's.
That's right.
Which is the
perspective,
the persona,
the process, and the product.
And the product, and we come full circle basically to that. So it's, so again, it's an applicable framework even for a freelancer. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So that, in other words, the freelancer has to think in the same terms as like a corporation or a startup.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, what am I good at? What you know, what business am I in? What customer do I have? How am I going to deliver this in a unique
way? But freelancers
way?
Are forced to be self-aware of all aspects of the business, which I think just leads to better outcomes.
Which is why the boutique thing,
yeah,
you believe in the future will not just be a societal like challenge, but an opportunity.
Yeah.
Because I can already think when we're talking, well, somebody that creates a problem in a freelancer interfacing with a big company, but that's a product opportunity somebody else is going to understand. How do I make it so I can onboard to your company?
Someone's going to build some massive machine learning AI thing that looks at all kinds of stuff about you and tells you stuff. Right, and that'll help in the training and education of. You know.
It's like, this is the best way that Greg learns.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, and by the way, every department is different, right? Like, how does your engineering department work versus, you know, your operations, your customer service, your finance, etc. Right, like, there's different things in each place.
Oh, because there's like a cultural DNA, there's a process
there's
DNA,
the evolved workflow. Yeah,
there's that's really interesting. So that, again, those are probably even opportunities as this evolves, this mushrooms out where. Okay, yes, we have this disparate workforce, but maybe they're stickier and they have more freedom, but also more opportunity to make money, as opposed to being crushed by AI and crushed by robots, which is the easy way to go, because there's always been Luddites, right? There's always those people that are afraid of the machines that they want to break.
Yeah.
But when you put it in that context, and I think that's a different perspective,
yeah.
there's a huge opportunity because of this stuff. And these are tools that, you know, is AI accessible to everybody?
Pretty much.
It kind of is, right? Yeah. And I think that's what people don't
realize it. You don't even know when it's helping you sometimes, right? But
Even as a tool, I could use in my business.
Almost everyone can use some parts of it. I think we have a lot of work in the packaging and delivering. Because
it's very raw right now.
Yeah. The raw materials are there, and there's a lot of work being done now to figure out how to turn things that we have, piles of things, into smarter piles of things.
I think of, and this might be a weird example, but Parse, right, which was like a backend as a service for app developers. So app developers aren't just making a mobile app that you see and I see, right?
Yeah.
But they need some brain behind it that's a server somewhere. And Parse was like a platform that would do a lot of common things.
Yeah.
I almost think that's going to happen with AI, and probably is happening with AI, where you as a business person don't have to be an expert in AI or machine learning.
Yeah.
You just have to understand that, hey, wouldn't it be great to figure out what these groups of people are doing and what I need to deliver?
Yeah. And, you know, I think to your point earlier about, like, if you feel scared of technology or whatever, if you know what you need, find the person who can explain to you what you need.
And there's probably going to be more and more of them, right?
Or whatever it's going
to
be.
There's a business that'll sell it to you.
Yeah. If they can't make you understand it, they're probably not going to be a good partner for you to solve that problem in the long term.
And this is why, again, I think of it, when you think of that in that context, it's like me as a freelancer, I can't do everything. And that's what I'll learn quickly. Whereas I can do my little job in a business.
Yep.
But if I'm going to then package up my skills, then I need bookkeeping.
Mm-hmm.
So I need FreshBooks.
Yeah.
This is today's example, right?
Yeah.
Tomorrow I might need to plug into an AI platform to deliver high crunch data to my customer, who is the company I used to work for.
Yep.
But now I'm working like they're my customer, right? Yep, so it's kind of the same thing, but I have more power in that circumstance. So I don't know. I think it's a bright... Personally, I think I'm optimistic. I think it's...
Yeah.
But I think we probably have to have these conversations.
It'll be hard for a lot of people, though.
I think this conversation might be challenging for a lot of people. That's why I try to bring it back a little bit, which is, listen, if you're an individual, I think, number one, the messages I take away are, okay, maybe the future is you're independent. And probably people that watch this might want to be independent. Or you're a business that's going to take advantage of by cannibalizing an old demand curve with something new.
Yep.
The 4Ps framework is actually really useful to understanding how you can create almost an innovation, right? And then you talked about, I guess, the drivers or the motivations under those. How do you describe those?
So I think of it from, you know, perspective is really about what we value.
Right.
You know, personas are really about what we believe.
Okay.
The process is really about efficiency, and product is really about efficacy.
And I'm always bad with efficacy.
Yeah, and it's really the qualitative
state of things. Is this better?
How do I make it better, right?
That seems pretty useful.
Yeah.
All right. So if someone wants to work with you, like who's your like ideal client? Like what? And then how do they get in touch?
You know, I think we work with companies of all sizes. So you know, where we have found we use a studio model, so we have different kinds of expertise inside of the Before Alpha. We do quite a bit of work like with startups who are trying to either figure out what direction to go in or to scale. We do a lot of work with large companies who are like actually exploring venture or acceleration or innovation.
So they're doing
programs.
An incubation model within their business?
And then we do a good deal of amount of product work with both kinds of audiences, right? So prototyping, helping you tell the story, helping you sell your vision of something. So if you've got one of those kinds of needs, I think we could be a good fit.
Terrific. How do people get in touch with you?
Gregarious at Before Alpha.
Gregarious at Before Alpha. All right. Anything else you want to say? Oh, a couple. Let's see. There's two other things I was going to ask you before I... I'm going to put you on the spot on the one.
Okay.
So part of what I want to do is I want to do a lot of content in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to interesting people and founders.
Yeah.
And I'd like you, and I want it to be someone that you think would fall into one of the categories we talk about.
Sure.
Product, marketing, sales, support, automation. I want you to nominate someone that you would be able to say, hey, you should do an episode and talk about what you're good at and one of these topics.
I've got a good buddy... Sean Bouchard up in Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's
another Canadian.
Another Canadian.
That's crazy. Greg's not Canadian, though.
No, I'm not.
Brooklyn born and bred or Bronx?
Bronx. Yeah. Sean's ran BD at several companies and okay. now actually helps companies set up and establish their sales practices and processes.
Okay, so Sean Bouchard, you've been nominated to be yeah. on Automate and Grow.
I will connect you.
Perfect, great. And then what are you doing to change the world?
That's, you know, look, I think...
And it doesn't have to be the whole world. It could be a part of the world, but... What are you trying to do about your legacy?
On a personal note, like I keep a journal for my son.
Oh, that's right. That's
yeah.
amazing. Yeah.
So I have a site called letterstosolomon.com. And so I write letters to my son. He's only 2.5. But I realize that, and it's really, it goes to the point we were saying earlier, I don't think you learn things in life until you actually teach them, right? And so I didn't want to wait until like the end of my life, or maybe I wouldn't even be able to do it, like, you know, to sort of to convey the things I learned. So I try and compact my knowledge by writing to him.
Oh,
as
wow,
things
that's
happen.
Really interesting.
Yeah. So as events happen,
I forgot
happen,
about that. I've seen that.
Happen, yeah, I write
that's
about
totally,
them.
That's interesting. I did not expect that answer, but I love that answer.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Greg, thank you very much.
Of course, man.
We appreciate it. And we will see you in the next episode.
This has been an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. Check out other episodes for interesting topics on how to grow, innovate, and automate your business. Subscribe or like us on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, or on our website at www.automategrow.biz. And get your copy of the book Automate and Grow at Amazon today.